We're going to start here on the top of Chav Hamad Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara dealt with Nisachik Bakubya, and the Gemara is going to deal with Lovebi Ribit. So Amar Ava, Lovebi Ribit Pasule Edut. Not only is the Malve problematic in terms of lending with interest, the borrower with interest also has the same restriction in that he'll be Pasul the Edut. Rashi says it's because of chimud mamon, maviro al adat, his desire for money causes him to violate a law in the Torah. So avadeik rashi chamas, he has a din of rashi chamas. I don't know if I would use a strong term like chimud mamon. He could be in desperate straits, the loveh who's borrowing over here. Nevertheless, he is willing to violate an isur haTorah to get what he needs, or to ensure that he has the money that he needs. Ranan tanan. Wait, what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says, Malve biribit. Right? There, it sounds like the person who is restricted or who is pasul de'edut is only the creditor. Somebody says, no, it's milve haba'a biribit. It's any loan or any derivative, you know, meaning the both parties in a loan situation. Bar benitus, asidu be'it reisa ade. So this individual, Bar Benitus, had two Edim Kan in front of the Beis Din, say, Charamar, Kame Didi Ozif Berivita. One of them said, before me, he lent money with interest. Becharamar Lididi Ozfei Berivita. The other eight says, he lent me money with interest. So one party is testifying to a third-party transaction. It's hard to know here if it's the same transaction or a different transaction. But the first aide says, I saw him lend money with interest. The next aide comes along and says, you lent me money with interest. So Pasle Rava the Bar Benitus. Rava said he's now Pasul the Edut. We have two Edim testifying that he is Malve Beribit, that he lends money out with interest, therefore he's Pasul the Edut. Va Rava Hudamar Love Beribit Pasul the Edut. Isn't Rava the author of the opinion that we just saw before that the borrower with ribit is also pasul le'edut? Vavalei rasha. And then he's classified as a rasha. If he's classified as a rasha, then he can't be, right, an aid, because adashet rasha aid. You can't make a rasha into an aid. Atarama adashet rasha aid. So what's the problem here? Is one of the witness who's testifying is a borrower with interest. He might be testifying to the fact that the other individual lent him with interest, but he also borrowed with interest. If he borrowed with interest, he's pasul de'edut. How can he testify about the creditor? The debtor shouldn't be able to testify at the creditor in this case. So when I says Rava the Tame, this is Rava the Shita To, which we've seen before, which is Dama Rava Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo. Person is a Karov to himself. Ve'ein Adam Misim Atzmo Rasha. Person cannot make himself into Rasha. So this is what we discussed back on Daf Tet. This is the concept of Palgina and Dibura, that we divide up his statement. We believe him with regards to the other party. With regards to the creditor, we believe him that he lent with interest and therefore he's Basul. With regards to himself, we do not believe him because he is a Karov Etzel Atzmo and he can't be Mesim Atzmo Rasha. Rashi says, what does it mean that he's Karov Etzel Atzmo? Because this person is really a relative of himself. That's the way Rashi was. A karov eitzel atzmo means that you are your own relative. You really are like any other karov would be in a case or a litigation. The other possibility, which other Rishonim introduces, the possibility that you can't both be a litigant and a aide in the case. I mean, that you can't wear both hats of being both the aide, but you're testifying about a party, and one of those parties is you. You either are an aide in the case, or you are one of the parties to the case, or a litigant in the case. So therefore, in our situation, when he comes and testifies in an aide, we don't believe him with regards to the testimony about himself, because he can't be a party and an aide at the same time. We just leave him as an aide. Rashi does not view it the way Rashi simply says that he's a karov. He's really a karov, like any other karov. He's pasul le'edut with regards to himself. So with regards to himself, we don't believe him. With regards to the other individual, we do believe him. So unfortunately, a problem that still exists today is a butcher, and he was less than honest, and he allowed, or he was found out, that he was allowing trefot to go out of his from under his hand, meaning that he was selling treifot. Even though the animals were treifot, he nevertheless sold them as being behemot, ksherot, or basar kasher. So pasle Rav Nachman. First of all, Rav Nachman was posel him from being an aid anymore. And number two is ve'avrei. And then he removed him from his position, meaning that he was no longer permitted to be a butcher. And there are other girsot, if you look in the Mishpat on the side, that he says that he's shamte, he put him into cherem. That not only was he dismissed from his position as a judge, as a butcher, and lost his status to be me'id in Beit Din, but he's also put shamte, Rav Nachman, that he put him into, excommunicated him. Also, Rabbi Maze Vitofre went ahead and grew out his hair, his, you know, his mustache, his nails, and Savar of Nachman Achshure. And he says, look, he's doing tshuva. And these are acts of tshuva, acting like an avel, acting like someone is menudeh. And he's showing some sort of remorse. He's showing a simanim, outward simanim of tshuva. So maybe we should reinstate him or remove his excommunication. Maybe he's just faking you out. Meaning that, how do you know that he's really doing this with Lev Shalem, that he's trying to do tshuva? Maybe he's just making a display because he knows if he looks like he's doing tshuva, that you'll reinstate him. So this is way to get back to being the butcher or get out of excommunication is to act like he's doing tshuva. So the Alamaita Kante, well, if that's the case, when do you know? How do you know that he's really done tshuva? So, kid Ravidi Baravin, Dama Ravidi Baravin, Achashura la Trefot, Summers Hashura Trefot, Ein lo Takana, Achilech la Makom, Shein Makirim Oto. First of all, he has to go to a place where they don't know him. Number two is, Viachzira Veda Bedavar Chashuv, right? There, then he gives back. He finds something that is expensive, or that is worth a lot of money, and despite that, he returns it. I mean, the problem that we have with this individual is, why did he allow the Trefot to go out from under his hand? It's because he was Chomed Mamon. He wanted the money. He didn't want to lose money on the treifa. So he sells the treifa as if it's kasher, so he doesn't lose money, so he can make money. Here's a person's chomed mamon, that's what we're afraid of in terms of his testimony. We're afraid that he is going to testify falsely for a payment. He will, you know, misguide the case because of whatever money or whatever he can get out of the case. So over here we say, what? He returned an aveda that was worth a lot of money. That already shows some sort of change in his character, that he's not willing to be chomei mamon and keep things that don't belong to him or do things unjustly. Or he declares something a treifa, an expensive behema, something that causes him a loss, a huge loss, and he still says it's a treifa, then we know he's already reached that status. Now the interesting thing is, why can't he fake this also? Meaning that if you tell him what the qualifications are, he can always fake it. The claim, or this is what Rashi points out, is that he has to go to a place Shein Makirin Oto. He's going to a place where they don't know him. If he goes to a place where they don't know him, then it's not a show, because nobody's going to care. And the only place that it's a show is when he's still in his own city, or he's still in his own place, then he's doing it as a show, because he wants to be reinstated, he wants people to see him doing tshuva. Because it does it in another city, and we get wind of it, then maybe we can reinstate him, because we know that it's not a show, because he's not doing it in front of anybody who knows him. So that's how we know that he's really done tshuva. At the next mention in our Mishnah, we did Misachek Bekubia, now we did Milveh Beribit, and Mafrichei Yonim is the next case. Abiyudar Psulei Edut. Umar says, Mai Mafrichei Yonim. What are these Mafrichei Yonim? So Hachatar Gemua, this is brought as a Stam statement, but they explain that this is Eid Kadmei Yonech Leyon. It's the same equivalent of yoni, in that it's racing, pigeon racing, dove racing. And if mine will come first, it means that there's a similar term of horse racing, gambling scenario here, where they're racing pigeons. Rav Chama Bar Oshi Amar, Aro. Rosh says, no, it's not a racing pigeons, but rather he's an Aro, he's a fowler. Rashi claims that its fowler is the melumad avi yonim imkomam levet balim akurcham. He had some ability to whistle or do some action that allowed him to bring or attract other birds to him. So the ability to bring in other birds or to have other birds fly in towards him, and because of that encouragement, he would obviously bring in birds that didn't necessarily belong to him. The Rabbeinu Chananel on the other, on his Amud Bet, he describes this Ara as this, Perish Ara, Koshrim Chut Aruch Be'of, you tie a long string on a bird, Umafrechim Oto Bagag, and then you have him fly up on the roof, Umetzav Tzifim, Umetkabsim Svivotav Ofot, and then he chirps, and all these, or I don't know if this is the owner, the bird chirps, and they bring in Kabsim Svivotav Ofot Kshal Bnei Adam Min Shovchim Acherim. It brings in the other birds from the other dovecotes. So the Rabbeinu Chananel describes this more particularly, being a case of not just a fowler who attracts birds, but he has a specific methodology for bringing those birds in. So Gemara says, Mando Amar, one who says, my time alo Amar Aro. The one who says that it's pigeon racing, why doesn't he say that it's a fowler? And so Amalecha, he's going to say to you, Ara mipnei dachei shalom ba'almo. Ara is not a problem of gezel necessarily, because the birds are coming, number one, voluntarily. Number two is even the birds that are the other dovecotes aren't really owned by the owners. They didn't go ahead and purchase them. They didn't go ahead and... The doves show up, and then they live in the dovecotes. So they're not really theirs. There's some sort of, right, there's no real form of ownership over these birds. And therefore, the only restriction is Darchei Shalom. The Chachamim instituted that you shouldn't be taking other people's doves, Mipnei Darchei Shalom, because otherwise it'd be a free-for-all. So that we don't passel somebody for a dude because of Darchei Shalom. Umanda Mara, the one who says it's a fowler, Maitama lo amar, yiktakad me yonech leyon, hainu, misachek bekubya. Why does he say it's pigeon racing? He says, because that's the same thing as gambling. Right? The dice game or the whatever game of chance was being described in the Mishnah by Misachek Bekubya. You have the same thing here with the pigeon racing. It's a game of chance. So why would you put it twice in the Mishnah, the same idea? So the Gemara says, no. V'idach, what the other one who says that it is, he says, Tana tolo b'dat atzmo, v'tana tolo b'dat you know. The Mishnah lays out two types of gambling. One type of gambling where he's, you know, taking on himself, that he thinks by himself that he can somehow influence the outcome of this game of chance. And the other one is, you know, he thinks he can fly his bird. He can cause the bird, he can train the bird, whatever he thinks he can do to make the bird work, fly better. Tzricha, we need both of them. If we only discuss the case where he's tole b'dat atzmo, which is, he thinks he can somehow influence the outcome of this game of chance. So now, it comes here, there we say, all right, over there, that's his pasul de'edut. Adam hu delog mamar makne, because over there he's not really gomer dato umakne the davar, because he thinks he can influence the situation. Davar, kimli benafshai di'edanetvei. I really know how to play this game better than anybody else. I can spin the dice, I have a hot hand. I know how to get the dice to come out with the right numbers. Whatever it is he thinks he can influence over here. Aval, tole b'dat yo. No, we're talking about the bird. Aim alone. By a bird, he's gomer makne dai. He says, I have no influence over this. The bird flies, doesn't fly. I'm gomer makne because I have no chance of influencing the situation. V'itana tole b'dat yo. No. If we said just the case where he was talking about the bird, the racing the birds, amar b'naksha tal yo milso. They used to have, according to Rashi, these boards, and they used to smack the boards against their legs or together and make a loud noise that caused the pigeons to fly. And so he thinks, I can do the clapping, I can make the noise better, I can encourage the bird to fly faster. And so he says, I know how to bang better, I know how to cause the bird to fly faster. So he thinks he has influence over the situation. So there's no gemira to that. A regular game of chance, there he says, I have no influence over it, and therefore he would be gomer umakne. So we have two types of smachtot, or possibilities of smachtot here. Real question is, how much influence does he think he has over the game, or over the race? So if he thinks he has influence, then he's not gomer umakne, whereas if he doesn't think he has any influence, he is gomer umakne. So here the Gemara is explaining how in both cases he's not gomer makne because he has a tzad to say that I think I can influence the outcome or the situation here. Now it's interesting, Rashi on the Mishnah, when he spoke about games of chance, he said over there there's no smachto because there's nothing in your control. I mean, that it's totally outside of your control. It's purely a game of chance. And since it's purely a game of chance, you have a gomer machne because you know it's 50-50 shot that you're going to win. And you don't think you have any influence, so you're going to be gomer machne. You say 50% I win, 50% I lose. I put the money on the table. That's it. Whereas over here, Rashi is describing in the Havamin of the Gemara here, Tolo Dat Tzmo, as being the fact that you can influence the game of chance here. The person thinks he can influence the game of chance over here. Rashi writes over here, he says, says that he has, that it's a mistaken assumption that he can influence the outcome of the game. So it's interesting that Rashi over here is suggesting that he can, or he thinks he can influence the outcome of the game. But Rashi in the Mishnah says if it's a game of chance, right, that there's no way. It's never an asmachta because he doesn't think you can ever influence the game of chance. Just a note, so Rashi seems to be changing a little bit his view of these games of chance from being something that's totally out of control and gomer machne to what he's trying to fit into the havamini of the Gemara over here, or at least the tzrichusa of the Gemara over here, that a game of chance, a person might think mistakenly that he can influence the outcome. If he thinks mistakenly he can influence the outcome, then he is not gomer dat, he's not gomer dat and machne, and therefore it's just an asmachta bi'alma. Right, so now the Gemara continues. Now that we've set up this Zuva Meitve, we have this large Tosefta. Tosefta is found in the back here, in Perakei, in the back of our Gemaras. Gemara is going to quote an entire Tosefta that matches up with our Mishnah, but describes each of the instances in our Mishnah of the people who became Psulei Dut, and what they must do to rectify that in order to come back or to remove this status of Psulei Dut from them. So my guy said the Mishnah, right, or the Tosefta says, a Meshechek B'Kubya. What does that mean? Elo ha-misachakim be-pispisim. These are people who play with these, Rashi calls them shivrei tzim, I don't know, wood blocks, jacks, I don't know exactly what they're playing with, dice, probably the easiest way to describe them. But lo pispisim bilvad, not just these dice, or these objects that are made specifically for the game here. Amru elo afilu klipei egozim v'klipei romanim. If they're playing with the shells, right, the nutshells, or the shells of rimonim, these are only, those aren't the official game pieces, but they are just substitutes or temporary game pieces. Nevertheless, if he plays with those types of pieces as well, that also is poselem le'edut. Ve'ematai chazaratan. When do we know that he's on shuvah? V'yishperu pispisehem. When he breaks the dice, basically. When he gets rid of the vehicle for his gambling. V'yachzru ben chazarat gemura. And then he leaves totally this habit of gambling. Now, the afilu is not part of the Tosefta. We're going to see a bunch of afilus. The afilu is added in by the Gemara. So that here it says, the afilu b'chinam lo avde. He doesn't even gamble or play cards just for fun. I mean, that the problem, obviously, when we play cards or he gambles, is that he's doing it for money. He's doing it for money. Either he's not osik mishubu shol olam, or there's a problem with smachta lo kanyo. The basic problem is that he doesn't understand what it means to make a living and to cause other people to lose money. So we're worried about him lying in the case or being paid to lie in the case because he has no consideration for others losing money or other taking away money from others. So now the tshuva is not simply that he doesn't play for money anymore, but he must also not play for free, that he has kicked the habit entirely. This gambling, he may not gamble even when there is no money on the line. Milve beribit, chel amalve v'chel aluve. Those that are pasul over here by lending with interest is both the creditor and the debtor. So now, v'ematai chazaratan, what's tshuva for these individuals? Mishikaru et shtareihem. They rip up the shtarot. V'yachzru behem chazara gimura. And they do full tshuva. Here again, the afilu. V'afilu l'nachri los mospe. They don't even lend money with interest to a nachri, which is permitted. When it's permitted to lend to a nachri with ribit. But even that, he doesn't do. Even that which is permissible, he backs away from. That's how we know he's really done tshuva over here. Umafriche yonim, those that... Okay, we'll say here racing birds only because you'll see that the Tosefta leans in that direction. Elu shemimarim et hayonim. These are people who are mimarim et hayonim. What is mimarim et hayonim? If you look on the Ein Mishpat on the side, mimarim, he says, perish lashon moreh. Komalim otam lifroach lakdim leyonim achirim. He's a bird trainer. Right? I mean, he trains birds for, he's like the horse trainer, like a jockey type of individual, but here he's training the birds to race. So this person is a bird trainer. Rashi, on the other hand, translates over here, Mimarim et hayonim, Margizim otam zel zel hilachem. It's bird fighting. right? Cockfighting, that type of animal fighting, that's some sort of setup. It's not this racing, but he teaches animals how to fight, or how to, he sets up these types of fights between animals. It's not just applicable to doves. Any form of animal, right? Any animal, whether it's a domesticated wild animal or a bird, all these are included under this restriction. When is it considered that you've done tshuva? When they break the boards, Rashi calls them. When they break the boards that he uses to either, you have to understand, I don't know, in the case of the racing we saw above, that Rashi described as that they used to bang the boards to chase the birds to go to they go faster. So he breaks those boards, then we know he's doing tshuva. Over here, and the Rashi says here that mimarin is that they teach them in fighting. It must have been that they used these boards also to encourage the animal in the fight. I guess that's what you have to suggest in order to say that he broke the boards in this instance. Does full tshuva. He doesn't even do it out in the desert. I mean, even where there's no yeshuvo shel olam, even a place where he doesn't affect other parties around him, right? Then we still say he doesn't do it. Now, clearly, this afilu b'midbar was added here by the Gemara, and for the statement over here, we're going to see in a second, if you're talking about pigeon racing, or you're talking about cockfighting, that type of situation, then the solution is not to do it in the midbar. The solution is the same as misakik bekubia, which is you don't do it bechinam, you don't do it for free even, you don't do it even for not for money. So this, the afilu b'midbar, is clearly added by the Gemara for the other tzad, which is what the other choice of mafricha yonim is, that they attract the birds, right? They try to attract the other birds. So that's afilu b'midbar avde. Even a place where it's hefker, he doesn't come and attract the other birds. So that would be the solution. That's how you know that this is not part of it. I mean, if you look in the Tosefta, you'll see it, but it's not. This isn't part of it. It's clear that the Gemara added it here, but it's adding it l'man da'amar that the mafricha yonim is ara, and not according to one who says mafricha yonim or the mafricha yonim is racing the birds, because that would be the same solution as mesachek bekubia. Sochare shvi'it, those that are transacting in perot shvi'it, elo shenosnim odin beperot shvi'it, these are people who transact in perot shvi'it, I mean they make a business out of perot shvi'it, which is impermissible. Ve'imotai chazaratan, when is we know that chazara, mishadigia shvi'it acheret ve'ibadlu. Another shvi'it comes, and we see they don't do this again, meaning that they have to be tempted by the same temptation again, and they're able to walk away from that temptation, they do not transact or open up a business in perot shvi'it. We're not simply talking about in these instances, right, that we won't, he won't in this case do perot shvi'it anymore, he won't transact in perot shvi'it anymore, but rather it's also chazarat mamon, which is, well, that's ketzad, what's the case of chazarat mamon? So he says, Omer, ani ploni bar ploni kinasti matayim zuz perot shvi'it v'hen nutrim b'matana. He says, listen, I have in my field such and such perot shvi'it, and I'm a mafkir them for the aniim. Right there, nutrim b'matana l'aniim. He's basically mafkir his perot shvi'it. So it's not simply that he does not transact in perot shvi'it anymore, that he says he won't do it, but rather he also has perot shvi'it in his yard. And he goes ahead and he's mafkir them like he should in perot shvi'it. So here, not only is he not transacting and making money, he's also here going to lose money, which is the important part. Not simply that he stopped making money in perot shvi'it, but he also has to do something that shows that he's losing money and he's okay with that. He's willing to do the mitzvah, even though it causes him a loss of money. And what's that? He's mafkir, his perot shvi'it, and allows the aniyim to come in and take the perot shvi'it. Yeah, but we have to see him do it. That's exactly right. We have to see him do it. Otherwise, we don't know that he's done tshuva. We don't know that he's really willing to give up money to do a din Torah or to follow the halacha. Ketani mihat. So that whole Tosefta is the question. Now we finally got to the question. Ketani mihat. Bishlam alaman damar di kadme yonech leyon. If you say it's talking about pigeon racing, hanu de mishkach ala bebehema, then you can find it by other animals. Horse racing, dog racing. You can find all these other, you can find it in any other animal. These are all types of things you can raise, all types. Lamanda Amar Aro, if you're talking about Aro as someone who attracts birds, Behema Batochi? Since when does an animal, when can you set up a, like a, attract all the local neighborhood dogs or all the animals in the neighborhood? That's not something you do. With birds, there's a way to have them chirp, or what you saw before in the Rabbeinu Chananel, you somehow set him up with a string and he attracts the other birds to come. That's true by birds, that's not true by animals. Where it says, no, in, there is, b'shor abar, with the wild ox. Kumadamar shorabar min behemahu. It's going to one that says that a shorabar is in a behemah. We have a machlokas. It's a machlokas in the Mishnah, in Kilayim, and also mentioned the Gemara in Chulin for dam, and whether you have to do kisui adam, and whether the chelib is restricted, will depend whether it's a behemah or a chaya. So over there, the Mishnah has a shorabar min behemahu, is a domesticated animal. Rabbi Yossi Omer min chaya, there's a din of a chaya. So based on that, you have shor habar will be classified as a behema, and it was, for some reason, there was this shor habar has this ability to track other animals. So if you look in Rashi, the shor habar, domen lechayat, similar to a wild animal, if he brings it up in his house, domesticated, holeich lemidbarot, he goes out into the deserts, or out into the fields, and then he causes other animals to follow him, to bring them in. There's a problem of gezel because of darchei shalom over here. So you have this shorabar attracts other animals because it can be domesticated as a din of a behema. It's called a behema. Seems to be that Rashi is, or the Gemara is not bothered by the fact that a chaya can do this. Chaya and oaf, the Gemara says, we know that they can attract. Problem is that domesticated animals don't have this ability to do this attraction because they live, they're domesticated, they stay by you, they don't attract other animals to come to them. So that's the answer to the Gemara is no, we can find a wild animal that's called a behema. We find a shorabar that's called a behema, and therefore he can attract other animals and bring them in. What the Gemara lays out here, which is very interesting, is this tshuva process. The tshuva process for when someone is considered to have left what they are chasing or some sort of violation. But really what we're describing over here in many of these cases is addictions. Things that trap people or people get caught up in them, and we want to see them. And it happens to be that this is one of the fundamental tenets of any rehabilitation of addiction is exactly what's being laid out in the Gemara here. Is not only do you have to stop doing the item, you have to leave it entirely. You have to walk away from it. That you don't even do it for free. And that person, like gambling, if someone has a gambling habit, not only do they not gamble anymore with money, but they don't even play cards. And that you have to leave it. That's one of the fundamental tenets of rehabilitation. Here the Gemara had it many years, but a lot of the 12-step programs for addictions are built on this. There's an unbelievable, in Avot Tshuva, the Rav writes, Rav Soloveitchik writes about this concept in doing tshuva, and he describes something, a difference, it's found in Avot Tshuva, page 23, in Kapara V'Tara, he talks about the difference between Kapara and Tara. In that process, there's a chapter titled, Derech Chataim and Derech Chotin. Right? That's Derech Chataim and Derech Chotin. And so he says it over here, I'll quote it for you, it says, Ma'anyein, Shebehilchot Tshuva, right, ein Rambam, Arambo maskir alocha zu shayched in tshuva. Kevin shetshuvatam she'elu, tshuva hamachshira le'idut. There's a tshuva that's not only about doing tshuva to protect you from the onesh, kapara, but there's a tshuva that is metaher you. Metaher you means cleanses you out and you're a new person and you can be kashal le'idut again. Hi tshuva shel tara, v'hi metzricha harbe yoter mitshuvat kapara. To be, cleanse oneself, to be tahor, is very different than simply kapara. Alei mitaber Rambam beilchot tshuva shedayo lechote imu mitcharet umikabalev shlo yeshuv lekitzlo. That's enough for a chote in terms of kapara to simply regret having done what he did, have remorse, and to say that I won't go back and do this again. That's enough for kapara or tshuva. But tshuva shel tahara lo maspik lifrosh min achet. It's not enough to leave the chet. You can't just leave the sin, you have to leave the entire environment that engenders such behavior. Hasviva, right? The environment, hagormim, the causes, those that push you to do these things. Hatnaim vakochot, right? The conditions and the energies that drive you in those wishes. Shesivivu et adam, that surround the individual, that bring him to the sin. Tshuva shel tara machzirat adam lekashuto rishoni. This type of tshuva, which is cleansing tshuva, that returns into his original status, mechayevet hu lishbor et hapispisim, to break the dice, likro et hashtarot, to rip up the contracts, lachros et kol hagsharim hamolchim mimenu uleolam hachet shem yatza. Everything that could possibly bring him back to the world of sin that he was in before. He's quoting our Gemara over here. Amnam hichein. That's the case here. Shnei minei prishot yesh. There's two types of leaving right? They're distancing oneself from the chait. Achat prisha min achait, v'sheni prisha miderech chataim. And that's over here what the rabbi, what we're describing in our Gemara. There's one thing to leave the sin. There's another thing to leave the way of sinners. Meaning to leave it entirely. Ein cheno nechait nolad v'yesh miayin. There's no such thing as a sin that becomes, that is developed ex nihilo. You can't have something that comes from zero. A chet is not just a product of no environment. A chet pri shel avira misuyemet. And it's a derivative, a fruit of an environment. Shotnayim machshirim the chet. Right? The conditions that allow the chet to happen. Shel chanufa legoy. Shel hitbatlut. Shel pachad amiti upachad medumeh. Gives all sorts of reasons for it. But the, what the Rav Soloveitchik describes over here is exactly what the Gemara is describing here. It's not, you want to know what tshuva is. In this case, you want to describe a tshuva. You want to know what makes a person kasher le'edut. It's not simply that you won't do the chet anymore. That's, we have to see a wholesale change in the individual, that he leaves the environment, he leaves all the conditions that will allow him to sin again. It's not simply he doesn't sin, he leaves the conditions that allow him to sin, and that's what the Gemara is describing over here. He day breaks the dice, right? He doesn't even play for free. He rips up the shtarei ribit. He doesn't even lend to a goy ribit. He leaves what we call over here, what the Rav describes as the miderech chataim. He leaves the derech of the chataim. And again, as I described before, this is one of the fundamental tenets of any addiction rehabilitation program, is that, for instance, you know, alcoholics, that they aren't allowed to drink wine, even for kiddush. They can't drink wine at all. I mean, leaving the environment or the possibility of ever getting back to that state before. It's not something you don't drink anymore to get drunk. You don't drink, period. And it's not that you don't gamble to make money anymore. You don't gamble, period. You don't do anything that has to do with a game of chance. You take yourself away from this derech chataim. It's a beautiful piece in Ala Tshuva by Rav Soloveitchik, which plays, which really deals with discussing what we see in our Gemara over here. And now the Gemara continues. Tanu hosifu alehem agazlanim v'chamsanim. So they added on to the list that's in our Mishnah, which enumerates those that are pasul le'edut. They added on two more people, which is gazlanim and chamsanim. Mar says, gazlan, d'oraitohu. What do you have to add on a gazlan? A gazlan is pasul midoraisa. He violates an isur d'oraisa. He's a thief. A thief is pasul le'edut min haTorah. We're talking about here that he's taking the something that was found by people who are not capable, right, meaning that are not capable or not necessarily of a mature mind, and we still, mipnei darchei shalom, the chamim instituted that their, whatever they pick up belongs to them, even though technically they don't really have ownership because they don't have the maturity to exert ownership. Mikara savur mitziat chereshot vekatan lo shchicha, doesn't happen so often. So I'm fine if somebody takes one or it works out, we don't worry about it so much. Inami mivnei darchei shalom ba'alma. We thought in the beginning it was just an issue of darchei shalom. Kevin dechazu desof sof monahu dekashakle. In the end, they saw that they were going after this because it was a money and they were chomed mamon. Therefore, they were paslinu. They made them pasul, either because they realized that it happened more often than they expected, or the other possibility is that they saw that these individuals were stealing or grabbing away these avedot from the Cheresh Shota and Katan because they were Chomei Mamon. It was displaying the exact behavior that we don't want to see in a witness or someone that's going to come testify in court. So since there was evidence of the behavior that money was paramount, overrode any other considerations, they said that they were going to people sell them. Right, Achamsan, the Rabbanan will posel them the Edut in this case. What about the Chamsanim? What about these Chamsanim? Originally, they thought these individuals came along and they, what's a Chamas? Chamas is that you take something and you pay for it. You don't necessarily get the acquiescence of the individual selling it to you, but you just say, I'm taking it, but I will pay for it. That's called Chamas. They give money for it, and it happens once in a blue moon. Once they said they were starting to be chotef, the rabbanan were gozer. What does it mean that they were chotef over here? That they used to do it, originally they used to get some sort of acquiescence from the baal. They used to convince the owner to sell it to them. They used to press the owner until the owner would say, okay, I'll sell it to you. Then they would say, that I want to do it. In the end, they just wanted it so badly, and the owners weren't willing to give it up. They used to throw the money at the owner and take it against the will of the owner. So that would be the Hamas that we're discussing here. So that Hamas, even though he's paying for it, and there may not be an Iser Doraista, nevertheless, since they are, in the end, taken against the will of the owner, we see that, again, these monetary matters, they're chomed mamon, they want something, if they want something or they want to do something, they will do it, even though it's a violation of the Torah. Tosfos asks a very important question over here. What about the problem of lo tachmod? How come this isn't a violation of an Iser Doraisa of lo tachmod? Here he desires someone else's product. He desires someone else's product and he's going to take it. So he's in violation of lo tachmod. He's in violation of tachmod and he's pasul eidut. Not because he is chomes, but he's pasul eidut because he violates lo tachmod. So Tosfos answers over here. And last night I sent out the mekorot for this, that the sugya of lo tachmod. Over here, that there are three gemaras. Tosfos quotes them over here. Three gemaras that really address the issue here of lo tachmod. I'll read you. There's one here, our gemara here in Sanhedrin, which is one of the gemaras. The other two are in, one's in Baba Metzia, and one is in Baba Kamel. In Baba Metzia, the gemara talks about a case of a kofar bepikadon is pasul le'edut. Someone denies that he has a pikadon in his hands, he's pasul le'edut. Why? Come and witnesses come along and say that he was kofer bepikadon. Inami, davenokit le'biyadei. He's holding it and we see that he has it. So, Gemara says, what do we say? Mashbino toshvua she'eno b'shuto. Make him take a shvua that it's not his possession. Gemara says, how can he make such a shvua? If we're making him take a shvua that he might have it in his possession, the pikadon, then we're worried that he really stole the pikadon. If we're worried he stole the pikadon, how come we going to believe his shvua? So Adonami Morev Amar Dmei Kayavin Lei. Here the Gemara says that he's not really a thief. Even though we're choshed him to take it, he's not really a thief. Why? Because he's going to have to pay for it. In the end, the shomer is going to pay the money for it. And he's more hefty. He says, I paid for the object. Yeah, I stole it, but I paid for it. It's not really gzeilah. So when the other thing is really gzeilah, we're not choshed on his trustworthiness in other places. He was just more hefty for himself over here. So Malay Ravachami Difli Ravina Vakavar Lav Delo Tachmod. Forget about any other thing else. It's a violation of the Yisrael Doraisa of Lo Tachmod. So it says, Lo Tachmod the Inche below Dame Mashmilahu. That people think that lo tachmod only applies when you don't pay money. People think that lo tachmod is only a isur if you don't pay for it. But if you pay for it, there's no isur of lo tachmod. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is the same thing. He's more a heter lesmo. He thinks this is not lo tachmod. Lo tachmod is if I want it and I don't pay for it and I take it. That's lo tachmod. But if I want it and I pay for it, that's not an isur of lo tachmod. So that's one more thing that the Gemara says. The last Gemara is in Baba Kama. In Baba Kama, the Gemara asks, Man ben gazlan the chamsan. What's the difference between a thief and a chamsan? So it says, chamsan yoiv dami, gazlan lo yoiv dami. Right, that a chamas, you pay for the object, that a gazlan doesn't pay for the object. So, yoiv dami, chamsan karitle? If you pay money, you're called a chamas, that's called chumes. So, right, so a person buys something, he purchases somebody to sell something to him, that's called chamas? No. Depends if you gain the acquiescence of the owner or not. If you press the owner, if you drive him crazy till he sells it to you, that's called, and he says, fine, I'll sell it to you, it's rotzani. In that instance, that's not chamas, because you paid for it, and the owner agreed. The case where it's chamas is a case where you get price the owner, the owner doesn't want to, and what Rashi described over here, you throw the money at him, and you take it anyway. Take it against his will, and you pay for it. So these three Gemaras basically frame what Tosfos is trying to deal with here in the Isser of Lo Tachmod. Midoraisa, there is no difference between Hamas and Gezel, and then Hamas and Gezel in the Torah are just stealing, period. This differentiation between Hamas and Gazlan, of paying or not paying, is a Derabonan difference. That's a difference Derabonan. Because the Chamsan in the Torah is only someone who steals, the Loi Dmei. In Tomar came into Chamsan, the Loi Dmei Pasul Midorabonan. But a chamsan that gives money is still pasul mi derabanan, and that's based over here in the Gemara in Babetzia and our Gemara over here. The person who takes and pays for it by the pikadon versus someone who takes without the acquiescence of the baal in front of the baal, there's a big difference. Why? One is done in broad daylight, and one is done as, you know, he's afraid. He steals, does it in a hidden way. The Shomer, when he takes the Pikadon and pays for it, yeah, he didn't get permission from the Balim. But nevertheless, he did it in a way that he's trying to hide it. He's not doing this in the open. He still doesn't want to really steal. He didn't want to take other people's property. He just, he was chomated. He wants to do it. Therefore, he goes ahead and does it, even though there's no, it's wrong, and he should be pasul le'edut. Nevertheless, we don't pasul le'edut because we don't see in him type of character that would lie all places and would lie in any instance. The case where we're going to make him pasul le'edut midrabanan is a case where, and you know, he goes up to the Balaim and says, I want it. They say, we're not giving it to you. He goes, here's the money, I'm taking it anyway. Right in front of them. Already that's a certain amount of brazenness that we say is indicative of him being pasul le'edut, that we're not going to let him get away with such items. Right, so now the Tosfos over here deals with this problem of lo tachmod, and if you look at the Tosfos, it says, "Bim Torah Mar Lifso Midor Raisa the Kavar Alav the Lo Tachmod." Ishlamar the Lo Tachmod Mashma the Lo Yibdmei. Lo Tachmod is only when he doesn't give money. The Gemara in Bava Metzias says that was a mistaken assumption that people made. Lo Tachmod didn't apply when you made money. So Tosfos over here says, "No, the Gemara over there meant that's what people think, and it's right." That if you don't, that lo tachmon only applies when you don't pay for it. But if you pay for it, that's not called lo tachmon. That's his first answer. The second answer is, he says, inami rabbeod yesh lamar, tohochi achi kamar, dmeika yoiv, vayu mefasim otam, achi omer ratzioni. In the original situation, they used to steal it, not steal it, take it, pay the money, and get the balim to acquiesce. Imkein lo avre, ela, alav lo tachmon. In that case, they weren't violating the lav of lo tachmon. In the end, when they saw that they were still doing it, even when the Balim didn't say L'mutzeani, lo yechushishim itpaisu paslinu. In that case, they made him pasul le'edut. So the lo tachmod would not be violated because the Balim were acquiescing to the sale. When the Balim acquiesced to the sale, there was no problem of lo tachmod. So therefore, we let him, in those cases, we weren't posel them. Later on, the chamim is that they were taking it even without the rotzeani. When they did it without the rotzeani, then they said, that's already a psul. That's chamas. That's a psul. Midr abonon. It could be a violation of lo tachmod, and therefore they are psulim li edut. So that's what Tosfos says. So Tosfos creates these three categories of chamas. Chamas d'oraisa, which is gezel gamur. There's chamas, which are psul midr abonon, is where you take it and you pay money, but you don't say, you don't get the balim to say rotzeani. It's the last case when you get the balim to acquiesce rotzeani. So even though it's not the nicest thing to do, nevertheless, there's no violation. You're not psul le'edut midr abonon because you got the balim to agree. Because even there creates a subcategory, which is within the case, a subcategory between the case where he doesn't get the Balim permission, depends how he doesn't get the Balim's permission. If he does it in front of their face, then he's pasul le'edut. If he does it hidden way, like the covert pikadon, then he is not pasul le'edut. So that's the Tosfos' explanation. But you see from Tosfos in the Tula Shonot seems to say that you need some sort of violation, you need some sort of action in order to be in violation of lo tachmot. It's either he didn't pay money, he stole and didn't pay money, or he stole and he paid money, he didn't get them to say rotzeani. But either of those cases, he requires an action to be in violation of lo tachmod. That happens to be a major machloket between the Rishonim on the Isser of lo tachmod. Right? The Torah writes the Isser of lo tachmod, the Seret Dibrot, in the first Dibrot, and in the second Dibrot. In the second Dibrot, there's one change where it says lo tit aver. So here, the Ibn Ezra brings down this idea. Ibn Ezra is the first, he talks about this path. Ibn Ezra talks about the fact that la tachmod is two different things. There's one la tachmod, which is yotzei l'ma'aseh, that it ends up in action. There's also a lo tachmod that does not end up in an action, which is just in the heart, desiring the other item. And therefore, he says, both of those are a violation of lo tachmod. Just to simply want and desire what belongs to others, that is a violation of lo tachmod, even if you do not act upon it. There's a second isur, or there's another, manifestation of lo tachmod, is when you actually act on it. You go and try to buy it, you steal it, you force the balim to give in to you. But nevertheless, according to the Ibn Ezra, there's such a concept that you can be in violation of lo tachmod, even in your heart. The Ramban over here of the Isur Lo Tachmod, he mentions this in Devarim, is Ubi'er ki kaneis bichlal chemda afilu ataba ki mitaveh ligzol michavero davar mikol shelo. He desires to steal something from his friend or take it because he wants it. V'lo yuchal lasot kein ki chavero takif menu. His friend's stronger than him and he can't do it. Or sheyesh b'makomo imat malchut, or because of the authorities. Over b'lav zeh, he's still in violation of this lav. I mean that you do not have to take it, simply in the heart. If you think to steal it, you want to steal it, That's enough to be in violation of lo tachmod. The Ramban seems to require that you want to steal it. The Ibn Ezra even has seems to be even if you just desire it, not that you want to steal it, but you just want it. The wanting of an item that doesn't belong to you, or something that's beyond your reach, that already is a violation of lo tachmod. The Rambam actually divides them up and says there's two different isurim. There's an isur of lo tachmod and an isur of lo titaveh. The isur of lo tachmod has to come to action. That only violates when you come to action. The isur of lo titaveh is only when, is even if you don't come to action. That's even if you, in your heart, you feel like you want to take something that is belongs to someone else. That is in violation of lo titaveh. Yireim is the one who comes. Sefer Yireim in Kuftaf, Siman Kuftaf Vav, disagrees, and he says, Chomeid, Nikrash, Chomeid Davar Chavero. He wants or desires something that's for him. Velo Chobal Kocho, he buys it for him against his will, when Otein Damir and pays for it. Oba Kifim Balav Shlokadin. Or he tricks him, or he does some way to get the item. Avo Chomeid B'mach Shavah B'lo Maset, Ein Over B'lo Tachmot. It's not in violation of lo tachmod. So you see, the Yireim requires an action in order to be in violation of lo tachmod. The Sefer Mitzvah Smag says, "Katuv esrei tevel lo tachmod, v'ktuv lo titaveh, hakol echad." They're one mitzvah, not like the Rambam says that they are two different mitzvot, but rather they are one mitzvah, and you can only be violate them. Again, the violation of that mitzvah is that you must actually act upon it. This agrees with the Rambam's interpretation that lo tachmod to dever separate items, but they're one item, you have to act upon it. The Smak, the Sefer Mitzvot HaKatan, says that even if you do believe, you are asur. The Shari Tshuva, right, Rabbeinu Yona, and Shari Tshuva says, "Zanu bezesh lo talel alilot berasha lacha sadeh v'cherim mecholah shel re'enu." Shouldn't try to get what belongs to our friends. Gam kinyatan mechram, even if you pay for them. "Zanu amachshavat ar devar razeh shelo naskim b'machshavato laso to." That we shouldn't try to bring, right, do this, machshava, and do something about it. So therefore, v'achomei lakach kol chofetz v'hu ish nechbad shim yishal sheila or panav lo yipalun asur lishol meim re'eu mechach umetat. If you know that because of your stature, a person will agree to do whatever you say, then you're not allowed to go ask him. V'latim yadaki natuni tein lo benefesh chapeitzah, unless he does it willingly. V'lo yiravo betei lo. So again, the Rabbeinu Yonah seems to indicate you need some sort of action. You have to act on this improper desire in order to be in violation of the iser of lo tachmod. Right, I brought you down. The Sefer Chinuch discusses it. Very interesting. The Sefer Chinuch asks, how can you demand of someone to not have feelings? So the Ibn Ezra in the Torah also gives a mashal how you can stop things that you're feeling. And Sefer Chinuch, in writing on this, he says, "Alta tamal omar v'echiyeh b'yadosh adam li'nol levavom me'atavot she'otzer kol kli chemda." How can we demand of someone not to feel something? So Shireh b'rishut chaviro v'hu mekulam reik v'rekam. How can we demand of someone to stop his feelings? You can stop him from acting. You can tell him, don't act on it, but how can you tell him that feeling? He says, that's not true. We can't demand of you to feel. The only people say that we can't stop you from feeling or feeling a certain way are people who are fools and rishayim. Says, people have the ability to control their thoughts and control their desires. You don't just have to control your actions, you have to control your thoughts and your desires, and that is the demand that we make of you in these instances. It's interesting, in the Tshuvos, some of the modern-day Tshuvos deal with the issues, but just because if you would like to buy something, for instance, you see a house that you like, and then you go and buy it, are you in violation of lo tachmod? The answer is no, because you're allowed to like something. You're allowed to see something beautiful that you're able to buy, or that you could. You say, I like this house, I'd like to buy something like it. That's not lo tachmod. Lo tachmod is a desire for something that's beyond your reach, or something that is inaccessible to you. That's a violation of lo tachmod. Something that is accessible to you, or something that where you're defining what you like, that's not a violation of lo tachmod. Alright, just wanted to give you a flavor of this lo tachmod, since Tosfos brings it up over here, but it's a very interesting yisur, where the yisur of lo tachmod only applies when you act upon it, like Tosfos seems to be suggesting over here, or even b'machshava. If you simply think about lo tachmod, that's enough to be in violation, like we saw the Ibn Ezra, the Ramban, the Rambam, and the Sefer Chinuch, and all believe that just in the machshava is enough to be in violation of lo tachmod. You don't actually have to act on it to be in violation of lo tachmod. Right now, the Gemara says, "Tanu odo sif aliyem aroyim agabeim v'mochsin." After that, they added on additional people into this list. The people are pasulei edut, shepherds, right? The collectors of taxes, Ro'im mi'kara savoy cry ba'almo. Really, they thought the ro'im would let their animals graze in other people's fields. It was just, you know, it happened every once in a while. They intentionally sent their animals into other people's fields. That they were, these people don't have consideration for other people's property. And they thought, whatever the king permitted them to collect in taxes, that's what they took. When they saw they were taking more than they should, they were stealing from the people, they were collecting more than the taxes, so then they were make them pasul. Doesn't matter if he's a shepherd for, you know, smaller animals or larger animals. The Rava really say this. A Rava be'ema daka be'eretz Yisrael psulim b'chutz la'aretz k'sheirim. A Rava be'ema daka, small animals in Eretz Yisrael is pasul, whereas an outside of Eretz Yisrael is kasher. Rava be'ema b'gasa filu be'eretz Yisrael k'sheirim, and Rava be'ema gasa is kasher everywhere, even in Eretz Yisrael. Mar says, how would megadli mitmar? That's someone who brings up a. Those are people who are bringing up animals, not the shepherds. The shepherds are problematic everywhere. They're problematic in Eretz Yisrael, Chutz La'aretz, Behemah Daka, Behemah Gaza, it doesn't matter. They're problematic because they let the animals go and graze in other people's fields. On the other hand, when it comes to Megadol, people are bringing up these animals, they're not the shepherds themselves. So there we say, truthfully, they could bring up animals everywhere and they're trustworthy. Why don't we allow them to bring up Behemah Daka in Eretz Yisrael? So Rashi says that the reason we don't let them is because these Megadlim, we don't let them bring up because the young animals, the smaller animals, will escape and go out and eat other people's fields. They don't sneak out. They're too big to sneak out, so therefore you can watch them. So Rashi says it's just a practical issue. You can bring up behemoth dakot, gasot, you can do whatever you want anywhere. The reason we don't allow behemoth dakot in Eretz Yisrael is because they might sneak out, or they're easily sneak out and eat in other people's fields. The Tosas, on the other hand, says no. Tosas says that in Ochanami, they both should have been Asurim. The reason they should both, Behemah Daka and Gas in Eretz Yisrael, should be Asur because of Mishom Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The reason they permitted Behemah Gasot because it was impossible if they didn't have them. They needed them to plow the fields. It was a practical consideration that they needed the Behemah Gasot, so they allowed them to bring them up. But otherwise, they would have Asur everything. Rashi, on the other hand, views it that they would be matir everything. The reason they're not matir the behemoth dakot is because they escape, they run out, and they eat in other people's fields. So mishum yishuv Eretz Yisrael, they didn't allow the behemoth dakot to be brought up in Eretz Yisrael. But otherwise, we would have said everything is mutar. So the default or the premise from where they're coming is different. Rashi says they should be all mutaret. We have to have a reason to be oser. So he says no, they're both asurim. We need a reason to be matir, and by behemoth gasim matir for charisha. Rashi says the default is that they're mutar, and the reason we're oser behemoth dakot is because they eat in other people's fields. All right, so now the Gemara says, "Achanam yistav." That makes sense. Miktani in our mission, Nemanai alai shloshe roei bakar, three roei bakar. My love, they doot. Isn't it they're coming to testify? The Gemara says, "No, the dina coming to be judges." The Achanam yistani shlosha roei bakar. It says three. They do shlosha lomali. What do you need three for? Right? So ella my ladina. Why do you need three way abakar? Called Beit Lata, the Logamre Dina. Nami, right? So anybody who didn't learn any dinim could be arbitrating with these three people. Why do you have to pick way abakar? It says, that even those people who are not, don't even know anything. Not only do they not know dinim, they're not amongst civilized people. They live out in the fields and they don't know anything. Nevertheless, if you choose them to be your arbitrators, you can't back out according to the Chachamim. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Stam Ro'eh Pasul, Stam Gagbai Kasher. The default is, you see a Ro'eh, he's Pasul, because we assume that they send their animals into people's fields. It's just not a profession that has a lot of honesty associated with it. Stam Gagbai Kasher. Stam Gagbai, a tax collector, we assume that he's doing the right thing until we have evidence that he's collecting more than he should. Avuad Rabbi Zera Avad Gavuta Tleisar Shani. That the father Rabbi Zera was the tax collector for the governor for 13 years. Gavata Reish Naharo Lamata, when the head of the area, or the head of the local government, or local king, or local governor would come to the city. Gavuchazi Rabbana, we saw the Rabbana, Amalech Ami Baba Chaderecha. He would quote them a pasuk to tell them, listen, get out of eyesight here. When he saw other people in the city who weren't like Chamim, wouldn't understand what he said, the Pazuk, Amar Reish Nahara Atalamato, the governor or the king's coming to the city, Vaidna Nachis, Abba Lupumbara. He's going to shecht fathers before children, Ubra Lupum Abba, and children before their fathers. When he tells him he's going to kill people here, I would not be here. So everybody, what did everybody do? Everybody ran into the house. Umiganzu, everybody hid, Kuliyama. We say to the king, who do you want me to collect from? There's nobody who lives here. The population, he basically, what he wanted to do was reduce the population of the site, what it looked like, the number of people that lived there. Says to the king, what do you want me to collect for? So what happened was the king would only impose a much lighter tax, and because of that he would allow the people wouldn't have to pay as much. So he helped them out by doing that. When he passed away, take these 1,300 coins that I have in my coat pocket, return to so-and-so, I took it from him to pay the taxes, and I didn't need them. I didn't need them to pay the taxes. I want you to return them. So you see from here, the tremendous honesty, obviously, of the Rabbi Zera, but we can't make an underlying assumption that every tax collector is problematic until we see evidence of the fact that they are problematic. Okay, we will stop over here.